Well, hello again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's time for the Project 223 podcast. Glad to be back with you here on February 15th, 2023. Our location is the Eagle's Nest, Puget Sound region, Pacific Northwest of the United States of America. We're going to be discussing an assortment of topics based on current events. When yesterday's conspiracy theories become today's headlines, you know the time to prepare is now. You guys have all, I'm sure, being the informed audience that you are, have seen recently some of the crazy stuff that's going on in our headlines, not to mention balloons and other unidentified flying objects being shot down over the United States. Never before has there been a hostile or a foreign aircraft shot down over United States soil. Even before World War II, the Hawaiian Islands were a territory, so technically we didn't shoot down any planes over the United States. Now we've had multiple in a short period of time. I have this question. Do they not have machine guns on these jets anymore? We're wasting these $400,000 Sidewinder missiles to shoot down potentially errant Mylar balloons flying through the sky. You'd think that they'd be able to switch to guns. I know Maverick was good at doing that and Top Gun. So not sure what's going on there anymore. But you think there'd be a little less expensive way to take down some of these objects. That being said, lots of crazy stuff happening in the news. One thing that did happen this week that I'd like to start off with is on a personal note, and it had some great preparedness lessons involved. I happened to be on a date with my wife this last Sunday after church. We went up to a local town, had some great food at a Mexican restaurant, and then went for a walk along a local river. Had a coffee from a coffee shop. Was feeling just fine. Came home that evening, and around 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, my stomach started making some weird gurgling noises. You know that feeling? You start to feel a little nauseated, and you think, oh man, I'm going to puke. This is not going to be good. My stomach started bloating up, and sorry for the gory details, but this is what happened. Stomach started getting hard, and I could tell the gas was building in there, and I started to vomit, and probably 3 to 4 hours of some of the worst illness that I've had as far as throwing up. And my body wanted to get everything out of me, so it was coming out both sides. And I wouldn't stop until it got everything out. It was horrible to the point where a few times for 30, 45 seconds, I couldn't breathe because I was heaving so bad. And it got to the point where my wife was asking me if she should call 911. You know it's pretty bad when your wife is wanting to call 911 for you. And I was almost to the point where I was going to let her because it was so bad in that exact moment. Now, after I waited, you know, a minute and got done heaving, you know, the urge passed to embarrass myself by calling a fire department to come in to help me. But you know how that feeling is when you're right in the middle of that illness and you feel like you're going to die. It was horrible. So one thing I want to encourage you all is to, in your everyday lives now, when things are good, try to practice some self-reliance, even in tough times. So where you may call a plumber to fix a leak in your sink or something, see if you can fix that leak yourself. Maybe you're having problems with your vehicle and you might just usually take it to a mechanic. Well, get on YouTube, pull up a video, search for the same problem with a car like yours. Maybe you need to go down and buy a new tool set from the hardware store to be able to do some work on your vehicle, but that small amount you pay towards that tool set would go a long ways towards vehicle repairs down the line in the future, and you'll become more self-reliant by doing that. The next time you have a similar problem or somebody else close to you has a problem like that, you'll be able to help them. So get in the habit of practicing self-reliance in the good times so that when you're forced to be self-reliant, it's a lot easier. So minor medical issues like nausea and vomiting, things of that nature, don't let that be something that forces you to go to a clinic or causes you to call 911. Obviously, I wasn't going to going to do that, but boy, the feeling was there for a few moments. And I've been called for a lot worse in my job as an EMT and fire captain. So work on that. There may be some things that you need to do to prepare yourself. We preach on the Project 223 podcast very much the benefits of having a mutual assistance group, having a team, a tribe, a community of people who are like-minded, who have committed to have each other's backs. Sure enough, the next day I was feeling pretty bad, but I was able to move around a little better. And a friend of mine who's a paramedic mentioned that he'd be more than willing to come over and give me a bag of fluids to help me rehydrate, but he didn't have any gear with him. Well, in my preparedness, I just so happened to have some IV bags and the AdSets that you need to do an IV. So I was able to have him come over using the equipment that I had. Now, some of this stuff was recently expired, not too old, but it's still good. And he was able to come over and give me some fluids, and that greatly helped my recovery. So even if you don't know how to start an IV, you're not a paramedic, you don't have those skills, if you have the gear that's needed to start an IV, you never know where you're going to be able to find a nurse, a doctor, or a paramedic who can do that for you. So not a bad idea to have some preps like that in your stockpile. Granted, some of those medical items do expire over time, especially the IV fluids or something that may not last for many years, but you can always swap those out. They're not that expensive. And if you put those on a rotation to where you just swap them out every so often, you can keep relatively in-date gear on hand. Also, having different people, medical professionals, in your mutual assistance group is very important. So if you don't have a paramedic or a doctor or a veterinarian or a nurse or nurse practitioner in your group, do some research. Look around. Ask some friends. See if people know anybody who's like-minded and has those skills, and possibly start recruiting them into your mutual assistance group. There's other preparations that you can do as well for outbreaks. As I called in and let my boss know that I wasn't going to be able to make it into work the next day, he mentioned that he had heard there was norovirus outbreaks going around locally. I hadn't heard that myself. So hearing that, what would you do if you heard a friend come out with symptoms such as that and you heard that there's outbreaks in the community? Well, one thing, you may not want to go out to eat as often. So having your home pantry stockpiled for long-term preparedness, but also just for short-term times where you don't want to go and eat out as much as maybe you normally would. So you have enough food to take care of yourself. Maybe it's a good idea to just eat at home for a couple weeks. Also, having products that you can just standard over-the-counter type products to take care of yourself should you have a bout of nausea and vomiting or diarrhea. Things like liquid IV, the powdered additives that you put in water, you get those at Costco. They work pretty well. They have potassium and sodium to help rehydrate yourself after a severe illness like that. Making sure part of your home pantry includes soups and 7-Up, things like that, things you can eat when your stomach is upset and still not be able to get some calories into you. Also having some medications like anti-diarrheals, loperamide or Diamode is another name for it, is a commonly over-the-counter item that you can get and keep in your medical gear. It's an anti-diarrheal. And that will help you should you have that problem. Hopefully you don't. It's not a lot of fun. So hopefully that kind of, it's a little gross, but that my personal experience can help you when you think about some things that you could prepare for. We're not just looking out for the zombie apocalypse or the alien invasion, but we're ready for the everyday disasters and emergencies that face almost every family in the United States once in a while. Another topic, moving on. How many of you have heard of the tanker leak in East Palestine, Ohio? This is a terrible disaster. They had a train wreck, over 150 cars in this train, and 50 derailed, Many of them were leaking hazardous chemicals. The local fire department there and hazmat teams on scene decided that it would be better to detonate the tankers and light the chemicals on fire rather than just leaking out into the water, onto the ground and into the air. So that was a choice they made. These hazmat technicians are highly trained and have lots of knowledge. And so we're hoping that the right people were making the right decisions on the ground. And when they'd made that decision to do that, the chemical was a vinyl chloride. It's a chemical used in making PVC, and it's a very highly toxic chemical. We're not going to get into all the specifics on that chemical as far as what it does in the atmosphere and what it does when it bonds with water. You can look that up yourself. But we want to talk about some general preparedness topics based on this incident and what you should do to be ready for something similar. So there's two options when you have an issue of this nature. You can either stay in place or you can go. So there's two ways to look at it. A lot of people, when faced with long-term preparedness, they say, I'm not going to leave my home. This is my bug out location where I'm at. This is the area where I'm going to make my stand. All my gear is here. All my survival supplies are here. And I'm not leaving no matter what. That may be the case for some situations, but there may be times where you have to leave. If you are going to stay in place, what are some things you need to think about? One of them, of course, is the water supply. You should have some type of long-term water purification solutions in your property. So whether you get your water from a municipality, a local water district, or from your own well and groundwater on your property, you never know when a situation like this happens how the chemicals or any kind of contamination could get into the water supply. So should your local government say that the water is not safe to drink, you want to be able to purify that water on site. And we have the Berkey water filter, and it's a great system. It's got two big giant reservoirs on it, so you can fill that up. And then you have the little spout down below, and it's got a constant supply. You've constantly got 3-4 gallons of water there. That's a good way to go. There's two different ways you can do it. You can have water filters, but then there's also water purifiers. And the difference is that the filters take away the hazardous bacteria and the things that can, and particulates and things that can cause you problems. But the purifier also will take away viruses and things. So you got to understand the difference when you're looking at water purification, whether it's purifying or if it's just a filter. Usually most filters are good for what we're dealing with in situations like this. So we've talked about these before. The Sawyer Minis are nice water filters. They have a long, they will provide you with over 100,000 gallons of water per one of these small filters. But the problem was that they don't filter very fast. So you got to understand that there's the compact size and portability versus the amount of water you can actually purify at a time. So there's different types out there. There's pump filters. I just picked up an MSR filter system where it has a 10-liter dromedary bag, and then it has a 10-liter dirty bag. And what that has a big open top on it. You scoop up the water up to the dirty bag, close it up and seal it. And then you can carry that bag with you and take it on the go if you need to and move to a safer location. And then you gravity feed that water. So you hang the bag up, it goes through a filter and goes down into the clean bag down below. So that way you may be coming upon a water supply, but you don't have the time to stop and let the water gravity feed through your filter, which takes some time. So you can grab the dirty water, take it with you, and then filter it into a clean bladder. So that's kind of a cool way to go. That's the MSR dromedary system. Also, besides water, you need to look at your shelter and the air you're going to breathe. So chemicals that were in the air, whether that be radioactive particles, radioactive contamination that's floating through the air, from the air through a nuclear blast or dirty bomb, to being some type of a chemical leak such as we're having now in Ohio. these could have chronic effects on your health. And so you want to have ability to seal up the airflow coming into your house. So things like having plastic Visqueen, duct tape, and actually extra filters for your home air system would be good things to consider in your own personal shelter that you're going to have if you're going to stay in place. Also, having air purifiers that you can run in your home would be a nice option as well. That being said, there may be a time where there's no chance for you to stay. The danger is too great and you have to leave. You may say, I'm not going to leave no matter what. But if you've got the cloud of chemicals overwhelming you and you can't breathe, guess what? You're going to go. So that brings us to the standard, everybody's favorite, the bug out bag. So we've talked before about the bug out bag, also known as a go bag or a 72-hour emergency kit. This is a bag that has all the supplies you would need to survive for 72 hours on your own. And this would be something where it would have shelter, water purification, water inside, some food, a way to cook the food or to prepare the meal. It would also have some type of shelter making device in there, such as a poncho or a tarp. You would have some extra clothes inside, fire making tools, probably at least one, if not more, knives and or hatchets, machete, things of that nature that would help you survive when you're away from your home to keep yourself warm, sheltered with food and water and safe. So having that bug out bag is important. Usually people's bags are small enough that they can be carried on their backs. So we don't want to overload those. We don't want big, you know, 50, 60, 70 pound packs, because if you did need to walk a long ways, that would be just too much to carry. That being said, there may be times when you are told to evacuate and you're able to go in your car. So what I'd like to encourage you to have is not only to have your bug out bag, I have one for myself, my wife, and my daughter, hanging on hooks that we can grab and go immediately. But I'm going to work on this myself, and that's having an extended bug out bag or an auxiliary bug out bag. And this would be a larger bag that is being taken for a longer duration type of escape from the home and having to shelter in another location. So in this bag, what I would include would be a lot more clothes, extra clothes, some warmer stuff, different options, maybe another set of comfortable shoes. Think that you're in some type of shelter situation. You might be in a little cordoned off area inside of a gymnasium, or you might be in somebody else's home. They might have an area in a barn or in a shed or something where you have an area where you can crash and sleep that's safe and warm and dry, but yet you don't have much as far as a personal comfort items. So you might have like one of those neck pillows that you can sleep with, or you'd have possibly even your own cots that you can put in there, folding cots that you could store with that extended bug out bag. So these would be things that you could take that would help you survive if you knew you're going to be away for maybe a month or so and you needed some extra clothes, extra long underwear or extra underwear and things of that nature. You could have more food items in there as well. So one thing that you could also do is, a lot of times I have a problem because I have things that I use every day that I would want to be in my bug out bag. So I don't necessarily want to keep those inside of a bug out bag because I'm using them, but I also don't want to forget them should I have to leave in an emergency. So you might want to have what you'd call your bug out checklist. This would be a checklist, and you can even laminate it with a card and attach it to your bug out bag. And this would be a list of other items that you want to make sure you don't forget to bring with you that might not be in that bag or that are seasonal dependent. So for example, if it was winter time, you may want to have that extra heavy coat that you wear every day, but you is not stuffed into your bug out bag. Or you may want a pair of boots that you normally wear that's for snow, and it might not be snowing, but you want to have those with you. So these would be a checklist you could go through real quickly and say, oh yeah, don't forget to grab A, B, C, and D. Throw those in your vehicle and then take off and get to safety. just some thoughts on what you might need to do should you need to take off. Also, too, if you are on the go, also thinking about air and your respiratory protection. It's nice to have some type of air purifying respirator that you can bring with you. This can be something as simple as a shema or scarf that you wrap around your face, up to the, and I'm sure everybody's got a few of these cloth face masks that we've been forced to deal with over here the last few years. But actually, much better than that would be an N95 style mask. Moving up from there, the air purifying respirator is they have a half face respirator, and those can either have dust cartridges attached, or they can have special organic vapor cartridges that you can attach to those as well. Those are the kinds you would see your painters wearing when they're spraying oil-based paints. Those will cut out a lot of chemical vapors that you may experience. And they have different ones that are rated for different things, but sometimes if you look through, you can pick one that covers a lot of the different organic vapors, and those will get rid of most of the chemicals that you need to worry about. There's also full face style respirators. Brands like 3M, Scott Safety, and Mira Safety make some great products that have a full face rubber seal that goes around your eyes, nose, and mouth, and also have the cartridges on the outside so that you breathe in. It'll filter out most of the chemicals and the irritants as you're making your way to safety. So those would be a lot better as far as protecting your eyes also from hazardous chemicals that could cause irritation to your eyes. And so think about that. They also provide eye protection so that should there be any kind of eye hazards that might be, if you're on the run, on the go in a disaster type zone, you'd want to protect your eyesight. So having a full face respirator is not a bad way to go. They're a little more expensive, but I think they're worth it. So hopefully we don't have a tanker leak or any type of hazardous material issue like that in your area. But should you have one, you should be a little better prepared if you follow some of these instructions. And last, another item that's happened recently. For the Project 223, often we'll do consulting with people who want to learn and improve their preparedness, people that want to have their church or their small group grow and become more prepared for some of the hazards and dangers that we're facing in the modern day. We had a consult with some fine people up in the Point Roberts town up in northwestern Washington. This is a small community that's right on the border of Canada. They're surrounded on three sides by water and on the fourth side by the Canadian border. It's a very challenging situation for them as far as needing to have access to safety when they're not able to cross the border. And they had some issues like that with the during the COVID pandemic where they were not allowed to go across that border for certain reasons and for certain times. And so all their gear, their equipment, their supplies needed to be brought back and forth over water. And so this group of people here wanted to improve their preparedness. And these were God-fearing, liberty-loving, patriotic men who were getting together and wanting to prepare their families and their community for times of trouble. Everybody has special situations in preparedness. You can't just take somebody else's list of gear, somebody else's lists of immediate actions and apply them to your situation. You have to analyze your own area. You have to analyze your own hazards that you're dealing with and then build your preparedness plan around those hazards. And so we got a chance to sit down over a video call and talk about some of the different hazards that they dealt with up in that area. And one of the things that was kind of interesting was them talking about building up their small community and their little assistance group that they had. We had a discussion about whether or not a mutual assistance group should be connected to government agencies. And they had some things that happened where they had some people that were involved with local government that were also wanting to get involved. And that caused a little bit of, let's just say a little bit of friction there as far as them being able to do what they wanted to do with their preparations. So I often think that if you can not be tied down to a government agency, a federal bureaucracy, that's much better way to go. You have a lot more freedom to operate in the way that your conscience dictates and to operate in a way that you feel is correct, rather than being limited by a bureaucrat or somebody who's has other things that they're more worried about than your personal safety. So keep local control of your preparations and your group so that you can be your own first responder. Also, sometimes getting too big of a group can be a problem. We all have seen how bureaucracies and large organizations start to have issues. I like to think myself of a small Navy SEAL platoon or a small group of recon Marines versus the large Army Rangers, right? They're both highly capable groups of men, but which one is quicker and more agile and can get things done in a quicker manner? They all have their jobs, but a small platoon of operators can get in and get out a lot quicker and do things that a bigger contingent can't do. So I kind of like that, to think about that when I'm thinking about a mutual assistance group. You don't necessarily want to make something so big that it becomes out of control and you've got political problems that you're dealing with. But it's nice to have enough people that when you make the call, there are people that are available to answer. I had a great comment by one of the gentlemen in the group and it made me feel real good. And he said, "Brent, you have shattered my normalcy bias." I thought that was pretty good because we were talking about normalcy bias and how our thoughts about how things normally are can cause us to have a problem when things change. When things go south, we're not able to adapt and adjust to new information and new things that happen. One of the things we talked about was charity. These men were all Christian men who were, had a great heart and wanted to be able to give and to help people. But they were also worried about if they gave away all their supplies, what would they have left for their family? And if they just gave to anybody that asks, how would they deal with that? My good friend Joe Dolio, who I'm acquainted with and have done a podcast with, he has a great way of putting it. He goes back to the Bible verse that says, if a man doesn't work, a man doesn't eat. And so I really like that. We talked about the fact that when people come to you for help with a handout saying, I'm starving, I'm hungry, I need something. Well, one way you can do it is you can always have them do some type of project or work for you and for your group that will benefit you, and then you'll be able to give them a reward in exchange for that effort they put in. You'll be able to help them with some food supplies that they need to help them move on to their next destination. So it's charity, but it's also not just giving out something for nothing. We all know what happens when you feed the bears, right? Don't feed the bears, because then they just start getting dependent on you. Or you start throwing seagulls, the French fries at the restaurant, and next thing you know, they're swarming all over your car and you're covered in seagull poop. So something to think about. Even that being said, I've been reading an interesting book series. It's the Black Autumn series, and it's talking about a collapse that happens in the United States. And this group of people is facing a moral dilemma. And this moral dilemma is that, how do you provide charity for people? How do you provide for the greater group of people? If you can survive yourself, but yet all around you in the region, your neighborhood and your region is starving and things are going to hell, what kind of life is that you're going to be living? And so, you know, God forbid that we are left here and around when things are that bad. Is that a way we want to live, that we're just going to do, we're going to survive at any costs and at the expense of other people? So I've been thinking about that, and I'm kind of weighing that out in my own heart. Is there a way to prep for major relief efforts? Is there a way to prepare my church, my city, you know, my region, and help them be more ready for dangerous times, for troubles that are ahead? Is there a way to prepare churches across the region, across the country, to be lighthouses, to be rescue havens in their cities? I think back to Joseph, the story of Joseph, the son of Jacob, in Egypt, and how God used him through dreams and a vision. He helped basically almost save the world by saving up 7 years worth of grain and food, so when the famine came, people didn't starve. And he was a light, and he was a resource to many people. And even to this day, people know the story of that faithful man. So I think about that, and I challenge you to think about that. How can you reach out beyond your own personal stories, your own family, your own neighborhood, and build that up? Your church. Think about the people in your church, those people you sing with and worship with every day, or the people you work with, or your extended family members. Maybe you don't go to church, but maybe you have other groups that you hang out with, and friends and people. You don't want to see them in troubled times. So let's all start thinking about that. How can we reach out to other people and spread the word of preparedness, to spread the word of being ready for troubled times and disaster should they come? So that wraps up another episode of the Project 223. It was great having you back here. We're looking forward to some great interviews coming up in the next few episodes. Don't miss out. So from the Eagle's Nest, hope you all have a great rest of the week. Don't look up.